Welcome to Corporate Cafecito, a podcast based on professional development, career growth, and respecting our cultural identity. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Corporate Cafecito. Today, I am joined by a wonderful woman who is from Puerto Rico, was in a Mexican neighborhood, has lived, you know, in multiple different places, and has this love for our culture and our, especially our language. So this is Elizabeth Colon Rivera. Bienvenida. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Bienvenida. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast. So as you mentioned, my name is Elizabeth Colon Rivera, and I am the daughter of parents who immigrated from Puerto Rico to Chicago. And like you mentioned, I had the wonderful privilege of growing up on 26th Street in La Villita and loved living there, loved the culture, loved the people, and missed it when I left. I was just recently there and amazed with the transformation of the entire neighborhood. I will say that.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And, you know, and for those who are not from Chicago, 26th Street rivals the Magnificent Mile in terms of dollars and revenue spent there. And it is wholly a Latina community or a Latin community, because Latinos live there too. And it is one where there is like murals and elotes and tacos and like fine dining. It has everything. You could buy gym shoes, backpacks, jewelry, quinceañera dresses. It is like being, to me, home.
I would agree. It actually feels inspired that way. I went and I had to go to Milagros, the Bangis and Tamales. And
yeah.
For a long time. So that's where I grew up. And I am the mother currently of two wonderful boys, a 31-year-old and a 20-year-old. And I live on the outskirts of Chicago, and I own an interpreting and translation company called Metaphrasis Language and Culture Solutions, which really came out of the need that I saw within my own community in La Villita, but also my parents who didn't speak English, but then I have two sisters who were from the deaf community. So watching them grow up in an environment where there was no human connection per se, because they couldn't hear, right? And that even felt that, you know, that even meant at home where we all gathered and we could not communicate with them as well either. So that prompted me to open my interpreting company. And here we are.
I love that. And, you know, you think about the language barrier when we get here. I remember my grandmother, she was like, I want to go to the bank, ocupo un money order. And I was like, okay. And so she told us, like, help me say, like, I need a money order for $135. And so, you know, we prepped her, we trained her. When we got to the bank, she was like, yo voy sola. And she walked in and she came out with her money order for like $125. And we're like, oh my God, we called her Ñañi. We're like, Ñañi, you did it. And she goes, hablaban español. I was like, you cheater. But you think about experiences like that, and that was so warm for my grandmother. And think about like what your company offers. It offers that warmth of that familiarity of that language. So tell me a little bit about your company. Tell me more about your company.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started it back in 2007, and I mentioned sort of why I started it. But I also went into nursing school, and while I was doing my rotations, I noticed the need within the hospitals. And every time I walked the hall, I remember like, wow, that happened to me when I was a little girl. You know, and one of the things that we do often is that parents will take their kids, right? Because we're the ones that speak English.
We're the interpreters. Yeah.
As the interpreters, exactly. And then on the hospital side, they'll go ahead and use a child because they speak English and they are not willing to make the investment or even go pick up the phone to do a telephonic interpreting session. So I saw that and I was like, there has to be a big problem here. And that is that we can't keep coming through these doors and not realizing that we had to bring somebody with us or we'd be sent away. So I actually researched the industry and saw that it was actually a true profession. that we don't have to be doing it on our volunteering time, and learn the training method. I took the training, I got certified as a trainer, and then I opened up my company from home back in 2007. And then by 2010, we were in our own kind of office space. And what we really do, I focused a lot on healthcare when I started, and we basically provide, you know, interpreting in the form of on-site where we can go physically there. We do telephonic, and now the latest with technology, we're doing video remote. And then we also do document translations. So we do that in 100 languages. And that gives people the opportunity to request an interpreter when they have an appointment and be able to speak in a language that they understand, which really empowers them to make the informed decisions for themselves. And I'm not talking only in healthcare, right? When you go to the bank or when you go to a social service organization, wherever you go, it empowers them to speak up for themselves. And that's really what we want to do. We want to amplify the person's voice by allowing them to make informed decisions on their own, you know, without any breakdowns.
That's so huge. I think, you know, like I go with my parents to the doctor still. It was actually probably my way of sneaking in during COVID because my mom had like a couple surgeries and you couldn't go, but I was like, oh, she doesn't know English. She needs me. And they were like, oh, okay. Like come along. But I think it's really important, one, because we need to be able to understand what the doctor says. And one of the things that I think our community does, right, wrong, or indifferent, but we trust doctors 100% and often don't get second opinions because we just believe what they say, even if we don't understand it completely. Right. And I'm speaking from personal experience and from the experience of my parents, you know, where we're like, pues el doctor dijo, but we don't understand everything they're telling us. And so I think what you do is fabulous. And I'm not the only one because you've had so many accolades. And I think about it three ways, actually. One, as a Latina, like, wow, like, hell yeah. Like you have been recognized for being a Latina. I know you were part of the Negocios Now Latinas in Business. I know that you've been recognized for what you've done for our community. I know you've been recognized for being a woman and, you know, thinking about like the Small Business Administration, you had the Person of the Year Award, you had the Enterprising Women of the Year Award. And then also when you think about like the work that you're doing, I think you were recognized by Cranes as a notable entrepreneur.
Yes.
And all of these things combined, one, makes me so proud to have you on the show and to know you. But secondly, I just think it's just remarkable what you're offering for people who, you know, maybe even don't have a kid or don't have someone who could go to the hospital with them, and you're giving them this comfort and that you have found success because most small businesses are gone, right? Mm-hmm. By year 10, it's like maybe 6% of the small businesses that opened 10 years ago are still around. So what do you attribute to your success and all your awards? And I'm sure you're going to get many more. And though that wasn't even all of them. So.
Yeah, I got two already this year. Oh, hey. I'm always thinking, let's give it to the next generation because I have no more room for my awards.
You're going to have to get a chinero.
chinero. I got my bookcase there. And then in my Chicago office, I have a chinero with some other ones too. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to be recognized for one, like you said, being a Latina and a woman doing wonderful work. And I believe that my success really comes from running my business as if I was a 500 corporate company. I don't think small, I think big. Right. And I find that with a lot of small businesses, one of the reasons why they fold, right, they don't have their finances in place. So they don't understand their numbers. They don't manage it well. Right. And then especially when you have family, you have family dynamics, it becomes very tricky. Then they don't manage it well and they settle for good. And we all settle for good. Like I settled for good in the beginning because everything was working perfectly fine.
Yeah. You're like, great. Right?
It was great. And so when I wanted to go to becoming great, I realized that I had to change things. I had to put myself in places that may be uncomfortable, meaning I needed to get out of my own way and meet new people that were not in my industry, maybe not my color, right? Get comfortable with having those conversations with them and learning that as a CEO of my own company that I can make the decisions, right? I can pick and choose the company that I want to work with, and that goes the same thing with the employees. So there has to be a lot of consistency in running a business. And you really have to look at it as something big. And, you know, people are like, well, so what do you do for business? You know, we often say, oh, I own a small business. Well, no, yeah, like,
I own a big business.
Yes, I own a company. That's how we should be responding. I own a company. Because in reality, when you look at the way they define small, they're like $500 million or less, was it? I'm like, that's not small to me.
Yeah, no. you know, one of the ways you could grow capacity is by reaching your capacity, right? Like when you're full, now you have to figure out how to do more or do better. Is that how you kind of, because you were in person and then you do telephonic and now you do video. Has that really caused a lot of change or is it through growth or have you like switched over from one to the other? Do you still do in person?
We do still do in person. All of the modalities that I mentioned are needed. And the reason why I say that is that it wasn't an add-on eventually, like over time. We started out with on-site, which was strong, very strong for us back in 2007. But we always had telephone. And then we had a little bit of video remote. Video remote really came into play when COVID hit, right? Because everybody started doing Zoom. And so what we're finding with our clients now is that they either provide us a Google link or they do Zoom meetings, which is perfectly fine. So when I say you need them all, this is why we need them all. If you have to communicate with a patient or a person for 3 minutes to get some demographic information, there's no need to call in an interpreter because your client's going to be charged a minimum of 2 hours. So that's where your telephonic fits, right? It perfectly fit. And then you have video remote interpreting. So maybe the doctor just wants to communicate with the family member face-to-face, but they can't have them come in right away. Maybe you do video remote interpreting for 10 minutes. But on-site interpreting, which I strongly believe in this, that human connection and relationship is very important. This is where you get to trust the person you're working, dealing with, not the interpreter, because we are just kind of, we define ourselves as we're the voice, right? So we help create that relationship between that provider and then that consumer. And those appointments that are more than an hour, when you're talking about death, when you have surgery, like very critical, sensitive information, you want an interpreter there. And the reason why you want them there is because if there's a miscommunication or we're trained to realize that sometimes a person's facial expression tells us that they don't understand, we can jump in and say, you know, the interpreter senses that this patient doesn't understand. May I clarify? So there's techniques that we use to help. And so so all of them are important. And so whatever new modality comes in, I think it's going to be as equally as important. You just need to know when to use it.
You know, when my father had surgery, his nurses all spoke Spanish and they were wonderful. And I think that you're right. It builds trust. It builds that connection. It builds that relationship that's so much, so needed and so, you know, so important in healthcare. When you said you were going to move from good to great, how did you know, or what were the signs that you were like, you know what, I'm good, but I could do more or I could be better?
Yeah. Growth was one of them for me, but my mistakes, I always make a lot of mistakes and that's where Right. And I was like, no, if we're going to become great, we have to clean this up. Right. And that meant hiring new staff and meant moving from a home-based business into a physical location. Mm-hmm. It meant me going out and networking and getting to meet new people. It also meant me doing new RFPs and seeking out procurement opportunities, right? I didn't want to play small. If I wanted to play small, I still would have been a solo entrepreneur. And who knows, I probably would be working 16 hours because I'm a solo entrepreneur.
Because you're a solo entrepreneur, yeah.
Correct, right? Over time, I realized that my skill sets was not in scheduling interpreters or answering phones. It was in relationship building. I'm really good at that. And so I wanted to step out of that role and do a little bit more building relationships and having other people do the administrative parts for me. And that's kind of how I decided to grow. I'm like, I'm going to grow. And I think all entrepreneurs, when we start a business, our end goal is to grow, to create financial freedom, to eventually either sell, pass it down to a child or an employee, right? Or retire with enough income where they don't have nothing to worry about.
Yes. Oh my God, those are like the dream, right? It's funny though. I think about like my kids and I've told them like, do you want to take over my business? And they're like, nope.
Same here.
Like, el heredero no quiere.
Nope. I'm like, okay.
But you know, if you think about what you're doing, I also think it's really important. That's probably something that you could be acquired, sell the business. Yeah. Like, you know, when you decide you want to, like, what would you do in retirement, Elizabeth?
I'm only a few years away from retiring, but I don't think it's going to happen because I still have a lot of energy. However, if I retire, I will do some consulting or some volunteering. I've always loved to volunteer. And I could just see myself at, I love healthcare. Let me just tell you that. Healthcare has been my passion since I was a little girl. So you may see me behind a desk welcoming visitors to a local hospital one day.
You're like, that'll be me. I'll still be in there. What do you do? I know you do a lot. So what do you do to inspire the next round of Latina or Latino entrepreneurs? Because I know you do a lot. You're very involved in our community, which is, you know, one of the things I love about you. So how do you influence that next generation, especially if you think about, like, where you're, like, and I'm going to include me, like, we're probably more towards retirement than starting out. So we have to get the next generation ready.
And we most definitely have to. First of all, I always try to hire employees who buy into my culture and my vision for my company, because I think they're a great example of creating the next generation. And what I mean by that is, if I can hire an employee who's young, very entrepreneur minded, and I can coach them and mentor them, right? They may look at entrepreneurship as an opportunity for themselves in the future. But in general speaking, you know, when I mentor the young generation, even my kids, the first thing that I really do is I listen. You have to be a good listener to be a good leader, right? And if you can instill in that person that when you listen, there's a lot that you can take away that makes you a great leader, one.
Yes.
Two, I allow them to make mistakes. And making mistakes equals lessons and opportunities. And for that person, they can make their own mistakes regardless of what they are, right? And you can pull out what those lessons and opportunities are, then they can take those opportunities and turn it into something else. So they can fuel it. Like I call it, like, you know, fuel it. Let them, you know, just grow with that. I think we lacked a lot of, like, mentors and stuff like that and coaches like I did, you know, when I first started my business. So I made a lot of mistakes. And the third thing that I do is I empower them to be leaders. Whatever direction they choose, if they make a mistake, let's talk about it. But you're going to be the leader in this and you're going to take initiative and I'm just going to be behind you every step of the way.
I love that. I think the step number one, listening, is so key, especially because a lot of times, and, you know, we see, like, we'll look for someone to mentor us and coach us or, you know, sponsor us. And instead they're like, do this, do this, do this, do this. It's like, well, that's not my dream. That's not what I want to do. And to be able to listen and say, oh, this is the type of leader you are, or this is what you're looking for, I think is so key in making sure that we are able to successfully mentor them along the road.
Yeah. And, you know, we're multitaskers. We're led by technology. And so we focus on multiple things at the same time, you know, like even us, when we were getting ready, let me turn off my phone. Let me turn off my Teams, right? Like these distractions that were coming through, even when we were just prepping for the call, are big distractions. So you can't focus and you can't listen. And I didn't know how to listen before. When I learned, I was very happy that I stopped doing that multitasking and started doing more listening, because I learned a lot myself too in the middle of all of that.
When I do conference calls, I ask everybody, could you please silence everything else? Because I think instead of spending an hour, we could crank through this in 30 minutes if we all pay attention. Bart. And, you know, it's like, I'm like, I'll give you half an hour back. You could play on your phone that half hour. But for this half hour, I need everybody here so that we can listen to each other and we can hear each other. Because the worst is, like, you know, when you're on a call and then someone's like, what? Huh? I heard my name. Right. Like, and you're just like, you're not listening. You're not listening. So I love that. And I also love empowering. To empower someone, you need to let them know, like, here's how far or how wide you can run. And, you know, you said, like, you're standing behind them. And I think about, like, learning to ride a bike, right?
Yes.
Where you're telling someone, like, go ahead, and I'm going to be here just in case you need me to catch you. And that kind of security, I think, is very important, especially in a leader like you are. And Elizabeth, you were also the first Latina president of the National Association of Business Owners, right?
Yes, I was.
So you not only, like, coach, mentor, and sponsor. You are like very actively out in our community. Tell me about that role and what you did in that community, because I think that was Humble Park, right?
No, that was the National Association. Yes. Okay. So the National Association of Women's Business Owners is a national organization that has chapters in pretty much every state right now. And I joined back in 2012 as a result of when I graduated from Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business. It was a free membership for the first year. So we're talking 2012, and I'm still active in that organization.
Wow.
And when I went to my first event, like many other places, I walked in, I was like, nobody looks like me. I'm like, where are they? You know? And I'm not going to lie. They were all white women. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think there was an African-American in that room. And so I said to myself, I'm like, I don't belong here. These women are smarter than me. I don't feel comfortable here. And so I left, that one particular event. Absolutely. I know. And it's very common. It happens to a lot of us.
No, it does. Right? I just want to hug that Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And be like, no, get back in that room. Yeah, I know.
Yes. But at the same time, I realized, okay, I want to grow my business. I want to grow my network, right? Mm-hmm. I have to go back and feel comfortable. And so I did it. I returned. I started attending some of the events and the conferences. And then in 2015 was when I won the Business of the Year Award, because I got involved. And then I was asked to become the president. And when I was first asked to become the president, here we are again, my little noises in my head, tú no cualifica. No, tú, And so I turned it down because I didn't think I was good enough to become the president. And then I was approached again a couple of years later, and I said, I'm going to do this. And the reason why I did is because it is a wonderful organization. However, mm-hmm. one of my goals coming in was that, together we're stronger. And when I said together we're stronger in my theme of the year, it also meant bringing diversity into the organization. And I started to increase our diversity in the boardroom with me. Membership wise, right? I wanted the startup entrepreneur or the established entrepreneur that was Black or brown to have a place where they could go and network with other like-minded women. And we were very successful in my first year doing that, to where they asked me to do a second term, and you don't do second terms. Wow. It's only a 1 year term.
Wow.
Yes. And I took that challenge on because I felt like we still had a lot of work to do. And you mm-hmm. saw our demographics in the organization Chicago change. We were the largest chapter in the U.S. We won awards for having our 5 stars in place, no matter the way we did it. And I'm proud to say that our current president, who's transitioning out very soon, she's our second African-American president in our Chicago chapter.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. Especially if you think about the representation, because the majority of businesses that are being opened, small businesses, are Latino owned, Latino led. And so to have a Latina at the head of a national organization like that, to me, is just very warm and indicative of the trends that we are the people going out there and putting ourselves out there to build these businesses.
Absolutely. Yep. And we have to, we have to show up. I always say you have to show up.
Absolutely. What piece of advice would you give someone who wants to start their own business now?
I believe, first and more importantly, research your business idea. Mm-hmm. I have seen companies fail. I'm sure you have too, right?
Yes.
Because they haven't done their homework.
I've had mine fail.
Okay. And maybe not for this particular reason, but I do see, individuals like, do this. And, it's not for the faint. You and I both know that, right? Entrepreneurship looks really pretty from the outside looking in. You see us traveling, you see our success, you see my awards, but you don't know what we went through in the back to get there, right? 16-hour days are no jokes. So researching the business is really, really important. Do you have the capital that you need to open up a business? I will say that I was very lucky, because when I opened my business, we were entering a recession. And I opened it with $500, which was really miraculously, because I never took a loan or anything like that. So I got very lucky.
That's amazing.
It is. But that may not be the case for someone else. Mm-hmm. And then thirdly, I want to say is that you have to have passion. Like for me, my job of waking up every morning for my business is not a job. It's something that I'm very passionate about. So I cannot say in the 17 years that I've been in business that I've mm-hmm. ever woken up and said, oh, I don't want to go to work.
That's so important. I think you're right. I think, when you think about researching it, I always tell people, if you can make a great taco, that does not mean you should open up a taqueria, because you have to figure out like finances, insurance, employment law, all these things that are going to come with it. Like making the tacos is the easy part. So to research it, and then also, you know, the funding. You know, I started a company in 2019, and it was a last mile logistics company, and I had 30 grand, and that 30 grand was gone in 2 weeks. Yeah. And so I actually ended up closing one of my 401ks, because I was like, I'm betting on this. You know, I had taken out a home equity line of credit, and I was like, I need to stand up this business. And I remember being like, my accountant's like, stop doing this. Don't do that. And I'm like, I just need it for a little bit. But whatever you think you need, you know, it may be well beyond that. So be prepared. Like have, you know, I made sure to sign up for a home equity line of credit just before I left corporate America. So I still had my pay stubs and my job. And then once you open one, they'll let you keep it for like several years. So, you know, I think that that's really key. And then three, you're right. Like knowing what goes into it, knowing that I didn't take a day off for, I want to say like 7 or 8 months before I had one day where I did not go to work. And it's not for the faint of heart, but it is for our community, because we love opening up businesses.
We do. And I, you know, I want to see every Latino open a business. I'm going to be, you know, I would love to see that, but I also want people to be very realistic about what goes into it.
Yes.
And, you know, the dollars that go behind opening a business.
I'm so excited that you joined us, Elizabeth. It is so nice having you here. I love talking to you. If you guys are like, I can't get enough of Elizabeth, she hosts a weekly show called Boricua Talks. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Boricua Talks is a show about nothing and a little bit about everything. Two women who come together unscripted to joke about life in general. And a lot of times it's about our own stories of what happened the past week. We are kind of like on hold right now. We're trying to revamp in the direction that we want to go, but we do have a membership platform now where you can become a member and join our community. And every month we have either a mastermind or we do some kind of events to just bring us together, build this community that people are really enjoying right now.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you for coming on Corporate Cafecito. How do you take your cafecito?
I boil my milk and then I use the frother.
Oh, baby.
Yes, I love my little frother every morning. And it's a Cafe Bustelo, or I'm going to say Starbucks is one of my favorite ones. And then I put some cinnamon on top of it and I sit down and I enjoy the cup.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, thank you again, Elizabeth. And I look forward to having you on here again.
Thank you for the invite again. It was wonderful.
All right. Bye.